Motopod, proudly supported by Roadskin, a UK label specializing in protective outerwear for motorcyclists. Modern biker clothing that you can wear all day long and engineered to save your skin. For the road, for life, visit roadskin.co.uk. Radio show all about merciful road racing. This is episode number 768 for May 29th, 2024. I'm your host, Jim McDowell, riding solo this time as our good friend and colleague, Richard Jowett, is on a work trip and he is unavailable at the time. And I'm on a work trip starting next week. So with Mugello this weekend, I thought it best just to have a quick review show, which is what we're going to do. And I'm going to talk to you all about what happened at Catalonia. So we're just going to get right to it here. We'll start off with MotoGP news, some of the things that I think are a little bit interesting. We'll get Richard's thoughts on these as well. The Indian GP has been removed from this year's schedule, and its place is basically the Kazakhstan race. So that's like in September 20th or something, I think, is the first day. There was a lot of rumors at the Indian GP that fees weren't paid, that this was going to be a cancellation. It's been a postponement technically. Maybe that's because the lawyers have gotten involved. I think there's more to this than meets the eye. Whether we actually ever go back to India is indeed a question. I mean, Formula One did stop going as well, but going to Kazakhstan, I don't know. Well, we'll see. The circuit doesn't seem to be very interesting from what the pictures are, but it must be somewhat well done. So it appears to be nice, but we'll see when we get there. I think the biggest news from the weekend in Catalonia was that Aleix Espargaró decided to call it a career at the end of this season. So Aleix will retire. I believe he's going to be, test rider, wild card for Aprilia as they continue. But does that mean that Jorge Martin, who was visibly choked up because him and Aleix are very good friends, is Martin destined to go to Aprilia, or is Bastianini destined to go to Aprilia? There is a desire to have an Italian on an Italian machine. Lastly, there are a few rules that came out for MotoGP. This is interesting to me. It pertains to helmets in the pit lane for crew. It says it remains compulsory for MotoGP team members to use helmets in the pit lane during busy periods when the bike changes may be made. This is defined as Q1 and Q2, and in case of the bike changes during a MotoGP flag-to-flag race. Makes me wonder who was not wearing a helmet and when for them to reiterate this rule. Speculation? No idea. But something happened and we just weren't privy to. And the other thing that I thought was really interesting was a tire allocation change. So for Moto2 and Moto3 immediately, riders who participate in both Q1 and Q2 qualifying sessions will be allocated one extra front slick tire of their preferred specification. Therefore, if taken, a maximum of 9 front slick tires and 1 extra rear slick tire of their preferred specification after Q2. Therefore, if taken, a maximum of 10 rear slick tires on the condition that both Q1 and Q2 are declared dry. So basically, if you're in Q1 in either Moto2 or Moto3 and you burn up your two tires to try to get yourself into that Q1 session, you really don't have a tire to use to go for pole. Well, now they're going to let you have a tire to go do that with. How many people want to see this in MotoGP qualifying? You think it's coming? Do you think it's going to require Pirelli to actually be the manufacturer? Because it seems like Pirelli is willing to do whatever anybody wants them to do, maybe more so than Michelin. I don't know. Speculation here on my side, but something to watch. Let's just get into Moto3 qualifying. In the first qualifying session, basically Bertoli, Munoz, Lunetta, and Rollstone all got out of that first qualifying session. It was a late charge by Bernetti to get there, but those four guys would move on to the second session. In the second session, we learned that Alonso was 6 tenths clear of everybody in practice. So We shall see what's going to happen there. When the green flag started, half the field went out and half the field sat still in the pits. It was talked about on the broadcast that you really only got three good laps on the Pirellis here before there was a significant drop off. So I think everybody was trying to play their cards close to the chest, get one good run in at the end. I mean, Alonso stayed cool. He was there. He was back in the draft. He was not going anywhere. He was playing around with everyone else. And basically, everyone's looking for that one perfect lap. And Vire was on provisional pole, but then there was a crash that happened in turn 9, which wound out us having all kinds of yellow flags because Rossi had crashed, which ruined a lot of people's laps. So when it shook out, we actually had Ortola on pole position, followed by Vire. Alonso was third, but yellow flags took away that position. So it went to Rueda, Furuasato, Yamanaka, and then Alonso. So that's how we were going to start the Moto 3 race. At the beginning of the race, we knew that Munoz was going to get a long lap penalty. That was for infringements in practice. And Furuasato also had a double long lap penalty. So it was remaining to be seen what was going to happen to those guys as they went through the race. At the start, Ortola got a whole shot. He was followed by Vire and Munoz, Furuasato, and Alonso. The little battle up front was Munoz. He went to the front immediately, maybe trying to get as much distance ahead of everybody as he could before he had to take that long lap penalty, or at least try to mitigate the results of the long lap penalty. He was charging to the front ahead of the other guys. Basically, Vire and Alonso then replaced Ortola at front and replaced Munoz when the long lap happened. And then it was Holgado, Lynette, and Rueda. Kelso fell at turn 2. Felt sorry for Joel. Got a soft spot for him after I've done the interviews with him at COTA. Nice kid. Things just aren't kind of going his way right now. So I wish him the best there. Ortola went back to the front with 10 laps to go. Then Alonso took the lead, and it looked like he was going to try to slip away. He really was moving around, trying to save the tire maybe, or maybe since he'd saved the tire for, you know, roughly half distance, he felt like now he could take off there. But at this point, the pack was now divided in two. This is a very calm Moto 3 race, especially with the long straightaway in Catalonia. Everybody seemed to be behaving themselves, and really you're wondering when the crazy was going to start. It just isn't a typical Moto 3 race like we usually see. The battle isn't up front anymore because Alonso's taken that. But the battles between Ortola, Vire, Holgado, Lynette, and Rueda, Munoz has caught back up after the long lap penalty. With four to go, it was a lead group of four, being Alonso, Ortola, Vire, and Holgado. Then Holgado was sliding back down, like maybe he had used up all the grip that was on his Pirelli rear. So he starts to go backwards. And it's so bad that he's really going to the end of the lead group. He's fallen so far back because everybody kind of had come back together again. And he sort of went all the way back to the very, very end of that list. But Alonso would run on to win the race. And he would be followed home by Ortola and then Rueda. Vire would slip back to fourth. Then Munoz fifth, even after the long lap penalty. Holgado had fallen back to the end of the lead group, so he would finish sixth. Then Lynette, Rolstein, and Feroli, Fernandez, Adrian, Yamanaka, Vaqueras, Nepa, Esteban, Joel Esteban, and Tatsuki Suzuki taking the last point. Alonso was truly amazing in that last lap. From turn 9 to the finish, he was unstoppable as he went through there. So it was a great ride by Alonso for yet another victory. The kid obviously has some talent. He's definitely the man to beat right now in there. And with this now in Holgado's sixth place finish, Alonso now takes a 14-point lead into Mugello. It's 118 for Alonso, followed to 104 for Holgado. Vire's on 75, and Ortola is on 70, followed by Munoz, Rueda, Kelso, Yamanaka, Fernandez, and Piqueras. Again, not the usual Moto 3 race that we usually see. I was hoping for much more out of them because they are the best race of the week. And usually this one was relatively tame. Let's go to Moto 2 and see if these guys were any better. In Moto 2, Kinnett was in the first session. along with like Ramirez, Alcoba, Masia, Sasaki, Vietti, and Darren Binder. The Franti crew, when Kennett came in to change rear tires and get a new one and go back out again, he stopped. And the Franti crew, the guys must have thought one guy on the back had the bike, or the guy in the front thought that the guy in the back had the bike. And basically, they dropped the bike. They literally, Kennett gets off and bump, it falls right over, which goes to show that in the chaos of what's going on, a well-oiled team usually doesn't make those kind of mistakes, I wouldn't think. But again, the pressures of what the moment of what you're going through, yeah, anything can happen, which is what this kind of showed. It was just, not to make fun of the crew, those guys work hard. It was just, wow, they dropped the bike. And you just kind of didn't think that that would really happen, but it does. So Agius, Kennett, Vietti, and Binder all go through in that from the first qualifying session to the second qualifying session. The second qualifying session, really, we were waiting around to see if Audiger would possibly get to the front. I wanted to know where Roberts was going to qualify at. He had been second quickest in combined practice. But given everything that had happened, we initially had Garcia being on the pole, followed by Vietti, followed by Audiger, followed by Arenas, followed by Lopez and Munoz, with Roberts down in 16th. However, that was at halfway, I'm sorry. So that's how it was halfway. But as it finished, Garcia would be on pole. We thought then Audiger, then Vire, because Audiger put in a stunning lap that almost nipped Garcia, but all it did was move him over Vietti to be second. Then Kennett, coming out of the first session, Arenas, Gonzalez, Roberts would move himself up to ninth. Qualifying here lately for Joel has been difficult, but there's always the race, and that's where the points are paid. And as Nicky Hayden said, that's why we line them up on Sunday. In the Moto2 race, Gonzalez was riding slow in practice and in qualifying. So he received a 3-grid place position change. So that's why he had dropped off from where he was. Now, at the start of the race, Guevara, it was Chantra, having contact at turn one and going down. Garcia had the hole shot, and then Sasaki was also down. Roberts took the first lap, ending up in 10th. Garcia out front doing his thing, followed by Arenas, Audiger, and Vire. Audiger and Garcia are battling up front, and they are the guys that are doing it, but they're sliding away from everybody. They're slowly getting out there. Agüero would get by Arenas, and that would mean it would be a Boscacora 1-2-3-4 at this time. The Boscacoras on Pirellis seem to be almost unstoppable now. Whatever they've figured out has really got it, really made them be good. By 15 laps to go, Roberts is 10th. He's not really making any pace whatsoever. But Kennett has got by Arenas. Now, Audiger got a track limits warning with 12 to go. Roberts also had a track limits warning. But Ayagura was the man because he moved into third position. Audiger still leading at 10 to go by Garcia and Audiger. Then Lopez, Cannon, and Vire. Vietti goes down at turn 10. A lot of people crashing at turn 10 there. Garcia got track limits, so now he had to be careful for the rest of the way. Agius got a long left penalty for his track limits. And then Audiger then has a long left penalty. When you thought Audiger had this and it was going to be right there and he was going to be able to get Garcia, no, track limits threw up its ugly head and he was forced to take the long left penalty. So Audiger heads almost immediately to the long lap, which is at the first turn. He promptly goes in too hot, loses the front, and crashes. Thus, the penalty being even worse now because he's crashed the bike and won't finish in the top 10, if any points. Now, Kennett then crashes out at turn 5. Roberts has a long lap penalty. And he was 7th when that happened. So he had made a fairly decent recovery, but having another long lap was definitely not going to work because everybody seemed to be fighting track limits. But meanwhile, the man was Agüero, because Agüero with 4 to go takes the lead and he made it look easy. Now, again, Garcia probably didn't want to fight back. He had a track limits warning. I'm pretty sure he knew where Roberts was. I'm pretty sure he knew where Outiger was. So really, did he really need to push on anything like this? No, he didn't. Literally, he could just ride home second and take the position. And that's what happened. Iger would win. First time he's won in almost 2 years, I think. Then Garcia, Jake Dixon came through with a great ride from where he was. Again, he really never showed up on the scene until five laps to go when Dixon was running fourth. That was the first time there was really a mention because everybody's got long lap penalties and we get crashes. And so we're really not watching where Jake is until the very end. So I know Rich would be chuffed for Dixon to be back on the podium. Then we had Alcoba, Center Aegis, Arenas, Lopez. Roberts would take the long lap penalty and finish eighth. Arbolino would be ninth. Then Navarro, 10th, Van de Gerberg, Salach, Masia, Bender, and Aji getting the last point. This does shake up the points for Moto2. Now Garcia has a 19-point lead as he is on 109 points and Joe Roberts is on 90. Iagura has jumped up now to 88 points, which means he's only 2 points behind Joe Roberts, but he's 21 points behind Garcia. I wouldn't put anything past Agura to be winning more races now that he seems to have the Bosque Cora figured out. Fourth in the points championship is Outiger, the guy that I think we all thought was going to be the presumptive world champion considering the form that he had at the end of last year, but he can't seem to replicate that this year. And maybe it's the Pirellis. I'm not exactly sure why Outiger hasn't quite got on top of it. We know the other Bosque Coras are all fast, and they're fast on Pirellis. So maybe it's an Outiger thing. Maybe he just can't wrap his head around it. Who knows what's wrong with Outiger, but I welcome your suggestions or comments. Motopod at motopodcast.com. Write in and let us know. Alonso, fifth in the championship, then Canet, then Arenas, Gonzalez, Alcoba, and Arbolino rounds out the top 10. It was a interesting race. There was drama at the end. You were rooting, everybody I think was rooting for Iagura after the terrible wrist injury that he's had. That's taken him, you know, basically 2 years to recover from. I think everybody was rooting for Iagura to get on with a win. He did. There was the craziness of track limits in that race, which made this race, I think, a little more interesting than the Moto 3 race because there was a lot more going on in it. But we need to finish up here with the MotoGP sprints and the MotoGP race. But before you can race, you must qualify. So in MotoGP, the first qualifying session, the Marquez brothers are in there along with Oliveira, Quartararo, Bezzecchi, Didier, and Raul Fernandez. Halfway through, Raul Fernandez is faster than Marc Marquez and Quartararo. Raul takes out a 138.4. That's like the fastest lap around that anyone had seen. Marquez had pumped himself up to finish second, but Didier comes out of basically nowhere in that qualifying session to bump Marquez. So it was Didier, Fernandez, and then Alex Marquez. So, and Marc Marquez. Now, Marc would then have to start the race in 14th. So started 13th in Le Mans, starting 14th here. Everyone was talking about how, you know, the track was slick and couldn't get any grip, but people were putting down fast times, but yet people were still talking about it being slick. So it was a bit weird, but maybe it was the temperature. It, you know, MotoGP qualifying, first thing in the morning, at that time, it's a lot cooler. Maybe when the track gets hot, we have a problem, but we get into the second round of qualifying, and basically Acosta just threw down a 138.3, like, bam, right now, out of the gates. Threw that down. I was like, wow, that's crazy. But then Bagnaia came by to beat it with a 138.2. Track records just being obliterated, basically. Halfway, it was Bagnaia, followed by Acosta, followed by Martin. My mistake. And then Aleix Espargaró. Now, Martin and Morbidelli are down at turn two. Martin loses the front, and then farther down the track, Morbidelli falls off as well. Not sure why that actually happened to Morbidelli. I don't know if it was target fixation or whatever, but Martin is now starting to blot the copybook by falling in these qualifying sessions. But when you're pushing hard, you are going to find the limit. And maybe with the way the Michelin tires are working with the tire pressure rules, maybe he just can't find that limit and know where to actually get back from. Binder would slide into second, but Aleix would come through to take second, and then he would go on to win the pole. So Aleix would have the pole, followed by Bagnaia. We had Raul Fernandez for a split second, but then that lap was taken away for a yellow flag incident that happened with like Martin and Morbidelli. But then we had Binder after that, then Acosta, then Didier, and then Martin. But on race day morning, the stewards reversed their decision of the yellow flag, decided that Raul Fernandez did not have a yellow flag infringement, so he would start on the front row. So the start would look like Aleix Espargaró, Bagnaia, Fernandez, then Brad Binder, then Acosta, then Gigi Antonio, and then Jorge Martin. So we go to the sprint, and in the sprint race, Bagnaia blasted out to lead, followed by Acosta, followed by Raul, followed by Binder. Mark Marquez was eighth off of the line. Acosta goes to the front quickly, and then Bagnaia goes by at turn five. It's Acosta back to the front again, followed by Raul, followed by Bagnaia, followed by Binder, and Raul is starting to pull away. Like, no one is going to touch Raul Fernandez on that Aprilia. He was rock solid fast. He was pulling away. Not even Acosta could really do anything with him. But with seven laps to go, Raul would crash out at turn 10. The tricky, slightly downhill turn 10 would cause him to crash out. He was frustrated at what he'd done. It was his fault. He'd made a mistake, but mistakes happen. But he did look fabulous on that bike, and I was looking forward to see what he would pull off in the race tomorrow. Binder was now leading, and he was pulling away from Acosta, and then Bagnaia got by Acosta. Maybe Acosta had used up all the tire. Again, it was very slick out. But then as soon as we got done watching that, Binder then fell at turn five, front end washout. Wow. Now Bagnaia is leading. Like, well, Acosta's second. And then there's Aleix. And then there's Mark Marquez. Then there's Martin. So that's where we are standing into going into this. It was crazy. Then Aleix would go to second. This is a fantastic sprint race. I mean, it's the race that seems like nobody wants to win. Everybody who touches the lead suddenly falls off. And like, did Acosta realize that? So he started slowing down. Don't know. But when we got with about two laps to go, it was Bagnaia out front in the lead, followed by Aleix, followed by Acosta, and then Mark Marquez. Then Marquez got by Acosta. Then Biaggi goes down at turn five, or Bagnaia goes down at turn five. Again, it's a race nobody wants to win. Raul crashes out of the lead. Binder crashes and falls out of the lead. Bagnaia crashes and falls out of the lead. And it's the same place like Binder did. Turn five, slightly downhill, braking, tricky turn. And at the end of the day in the heat, apparently nobody had any grip. And down he went. So Aleix was gifted a victory in the sprint. And then Marquez would be second position. Then Acosta would have a podium in third, followed by Martin, then the beast himself, Bagnaia, and then DG Antonia. A wild and crazy sprint race with that one, folks. Definitely one to watch. Probably one of the better sprint races so far this year. Now, we get to Sunday's race. There's a different tire strategy. The consensus of almost everyone on the grid was medium front and the hard rear option, but not Pedro Acosta. Believing in himself, he went with a medium front and a soft rear. Mark Marquez, having to come from way back in the pack in 14th, decided on a medium front and a soft rear. And then Miller was on a medium front and a soft rear as well. At the start, Bagnaia got the whole shot followed by Acosta and Binder, with Martin and Aleix falling close behind. Marquez had made his way up to 11th at the start. Martin was able to go by Binder at turn 10. Bagnaia and Acosta and Martin are out front with Binder with them. The Bagnaia-Acosta battle is awesome. They come out of 10, they want to pass each other. Acosta's poking, probing, doing everything he can, but Bagnaia is keeping the pace slow. He knows the tires are not going to last in this hot conditions, So he's letting the medium bed in, and he doesn't want to cost on his soft to get by. It's a masterful job of writing by Benyaya to slow the pace, take the lines that Acosta wants to use, and thereby keep him behind. Every time that, you know, Acosta seemed to go by, wow, Benyaya would just come right back by at him. Never gave him a chance to think about it. Finally, Martin was able to get, who had now worked his way up past Acosta at turn 10, and Martin started to really fly. Maybe Acosta was going to go backwards. Maybe Martin was coming forward because of the medium. Don't really know exactly what was going on at this point in it. But Martin took a shot at Benyaya at 10, got him, and Acosta came right on through. So they were able to make that pass stick. And so we got Benyaya back in third. Martin starts to pull away with 15 laps to go. He's got 1.5 seconds on Acosta, who had gotten back past Benyaya, sorry. And then Benyaya had a good second over Brad Binder. Then it was Aleix and Raul Fernandez. Raul hanging in there, maybe perhaps saving the tire or trying not to fall off so that he could actually have a really good race. Not sure where he what he was thinking, but Marquez was eighth. Aleix was now moving forward, and he was starting to close in on everybody. Binder was over 4 seconds behind Benyaya, and Aleix has moved through those guys to be running basically fourth. Then Pedro Acosta crashes out at turn 10. He lost the front end. He looked like he was starting to find his game again. He was starting to cut down the lead on Martin, but he fell off. So again, the youthful enthusiasm of a potential podium, potential win, and be the youngest guy to win a MotoGP race, and Acosta bends it yet again. Again, folks, this is just the learning process that that kid's going to go through to get figure out where he is. I do tend to think he may be pushing the KTM / GasGas a little bit beyond where it can be comfortably ridden, just because he's got the talent to do it sort of a la Marquez. Because I guarantee you, as good as the KTM is, it is not the best bike on the track. That is definitely the Ducati, and it's probably tied for the Aprilia. But on that main stretch, Acosta just was an absolute rocket ship. Going to be very, very interesting to see what happens at Mugello. If Acosta's bike is that fast there, how fast is it going to be when he's in Mugello? Mugello may be where Acosta breaks out and actually wins a MotoGP race. Hell, he may even win just the sprint. But either way, I look for big things out of Acosta at Mugello. Something to look for. With 13 to go, Mark Marquez got past Binder. And then you're thinking, well, how much farther up can Marquez go? You know, he's on a soft. He's on a soft, right? So you're thinking, wow, what's he going to do? Martin has a 1.1-second lead over Benyaya, and there's 3.5 seconds to Aleix and Fernandez. And then we get Marc Marquez. Then Bastianini is given a long lap penalty. Now, this would elevate because Bastianini would not take the long lap penalty in time. And this was for riding, for taking the shortcut at turn two, which Bastianini felt that he was forced out there. Now, while that may be true, the stewards didn't see it that way, and you should respond to what the stewards say. Bastianini didn't take the long lap penalty. Bastianini then gets a double long lap penalty because he didn't take the first penalty. And then Benyaya just keeps going around and around and around. Or Bastianini just keeps going around and around and around. And eventually is giving a ride-through penalty as well. And he never took that either. He was definitely defiant to what the stewards are going to say, because he honestly believed that he had been wronged over the situation, which was crazy. But, you know, I don't know where I stand on this one. Love to get Rich's thoughts on this. Love to get your thoughts at it too. Again, motopod at motopodcast.com. Write in and let me know. Was Bastianini right for ignoring Stewart's orders? Or is this just like, hey, I'm going to ride this out in protest and I don't care what you do to me? Not sure which way that one's going. But Benyaya is now just pecking away at the lead that Martin has. He just starts to start nibbling away. Marquez would finally get by Raul Fernandez with 7 to go. Benyaya is then by Martin with 6 to go. He did it at turn 5, so that's like a big, you know, kind of stick it back to the track that took you away your win the day before by passing the corner that you crashed on. Benyaya just simply had way more edge grip than Martin did. He just did not have, the grip at all. He was struggling massively to finish the race. As it came down, it's Benyaya leading over Martin, over Aleix, Marc Marquez, Raul Fernandez, and Alex Marquez with 5 to go at that point. Then 93, Marc Marquez will get past Aleix, and then we basically, this now is how we ride out. Benyaya would win the race, take the 25 points. Martin would take 20. Marquez would be back on the podium again. He podium in both races from 14th place. An incredible ride by Marc Marquez over the weekend. I think you count Marc Marquez off at your peril, and I can't even imagine what that guy would do if he had a 2024 Ducati. So again, there's going to be, we're going to talk about this all the whole year. Does Marquez warrant getting a 2025 factory Ducati in the Gresini team? I know there's a lot of politics about all that, but it's mouthwateringly tasty, isn't it, to have that, the cat amongst the pigeons. Aleix at his last home race would be fourth, Digi Antonio fifth, Raul Fernandez with a great sixth place, then because he did hold off Alex Marquez. Bender slid back to eighth, Quartararo ninth, Miguel Oliveira, Bezzecchi, Vinales. Acosta would finish 13th and take 3 points. He remounted and was blindingly quick, meaning that his gamble on a soft tire was going to work. If he would have stayed on the bike, could he have beaten Benyaya? Maybe. Maybe not. But I would have put money he would have been on the podium somewhere. Then Nakagami and Juan Mir scoring a point on the Repsol Honda. And that takes us to the World Championship standings. Jorge Martin is on 155 points now. He is 39 points clear of Benyaya. Marc Marquez is now on 114 points, 2 behind Benyaya. And if you all thought that Marc Marquez, given the crashes he had early in the year, would be third in this championship, I just didn't think it was going to happen. But he is right at the ship and has made his way up to third. Using the podium in the sprint races and the podiums in the main races, he's collecting handfuls of points and moving up quickly. Bastianini fourth, Vinales fifth, Acosta slides backwards to sixth. And then it's Aleix Espargaró, Binder, Digi Antonio, and Bezzecchi, your top 10 in the point standings. And that wraps up the craziness in Catalonia. Hopefully you guys just got what you needed. Some quick news, quick report. We have Mugello this weekend. Be looking forward to that. And with that, everybody, ride safe.